Welcome to Brightside Broadcast News for Thursday, January 18th, 2024. I'm Mike Adams, and today we have four striking examples of how your government, if you are an American, how your government has been weaponized against you and is waging war on you. Four bombshell stories have come out in the last 24 hours that will just blow your mind. You won't even believe what you're about to hear. Also, I've got an interview for you today with John Williams. Now, John Williams is a really well-informed financial analyst and commentator and a video personality. And he's got a really popular channel on Brightown.com. That's how I found out about him. And I was watching his videos and seeing, like, this guy really gets it about real estate and the banks and the debt collapse and all of that. And he's also pretty popular on YouTube as well. But he's got a great channel on Brightown.com. So we reached out to him to invite him on, and that's the interview I'll have for you today. Now, this interview is, I interviewed him a little while ago, but I didn't want to publish interviews over the holidays. And so now I'm actually catching up on some of the interviews that we had held back. This was one of those. His website, by the way, he's not a sponsor, this is not a paid promotion or anything, but his main website is called greatcreditfast.com because he helps people repair, bad credit judgments, bankruptcies, and things like that. Anyway, I do ask him about that, but that's not the main reason why I have him on. I have him on because he gets it about the financial collapse that's coming and how so many people are going to get destroyed by, well, the financial situation. So watch for that interview here later today. Now, as I promised, I have four stunning examples of the government weaponizing everything against we, the American people. But before I get to that, I want to talk about Trump making an announcement that would actually prevent the government from launching CBDCs. So central bank digital currencies, which is a financial enslavement and surveillance system, total Orwellian control over your money. So Trump said this in a speech in New Hampshire just in the last day. He says, quote, "I will never allow central bank digital currency to come into existence." This was reported by the National Pulse. He says, quote, "As your president, I will never allow the creation of a central bank digital currency. Such a currency would give the federal government absolute control over your money. This would be a dangerous threat to freedom, and I will stop it from coming to America. We're going to put in place strong protections to stop banks and regulators from trying to debank you for your political beliefs. That will never happen while I am your president." So this is emerging as one of the key benefits of having Trump as our next president, is that Trump will work to shield the American people from the weaponization of the federal government. And this weaponization is utterly out of control, as you're about to hear here with the four examples I have for you today. But think about Trump as like a blocker, like in a game of football or basketball or something. He's blocking the offense and shielding, like he's playing defense, but blocking the offense from being able to sack the quarterback, where like you're the quarterback. I know I normally don't do sports metaphors because I'm not a sports fan, but I do know enough about football. I mean, I played ball when I was in high school, so I know enough about it to make a metaphor. So we're the quarterback, and the other team is trying to sack us and destroy us, and Trump is like the defensive line, and he's trying to block them from getting to us, right? So I think that's a fair metaphor for what Trump is going to do if he is elected president. So now let's talk about the four shocking examples of the weaponization of the government against the people. I'm going to start with small ones first. So number four will be the most impactful. Let's start with the first one. This is a story that comes out of the Epoch Times. DNA contaminants in COVID vaccines are, quote, beyond the pale, says the Florida Surgeon General, and he calls for vaccine halt. And that's Dr. Joseph Latipo, who I interviewed previously, by the way. And he was on Epoch TV's show called American Thought Leaders, and he says that the vaccines have got to be stopped. He says, quote, "DNA is a common contaminant of many biological products, We can use DNA to produce different drugs like insulin and other biologics. That's a wonderful innovation. And normally, that DNA doesn't pose a problem. However, he goes on to explain that since the mRNA vaccines use lipid nanoparticles, that delivers mRNA into your cells. So DNA contaminants can also hitch a ride and enter your cells. And then that can be integrated into the human genome, in essence. Your chromosomes are altered. DNA alteration can happen. So this is why Dr. Latipo says, we've got to stop this. But he says that the vaccine establishment and the FDA in particular is downplaying this risk. And if you understand this, you understand that the FDA and the CDC and the DOD, which was involved in this bioweapons creation, they weaponized biology against the American people. This is a biological weapon that has been unleashed against us. Now, you've known that for a long time listening to this podcast, but now even the Surgeon General of the state of Florida is saying the same thing. Fascinating. Okay. Next story. This one is from the National Pulse. CDC axed alert warning of connection between heart inflammation and COVID-19 vaccines. So there was a draft alert that was going to go out to state and local health officials that was supposed to warn of a connection between myocarditis and COVID-19 vaccines. But as the National Pulse reports, the CDC blocked it before it could be sent. The alert addressed evidence tying heart inflammation to two of the mRNA vaccines manufactured by Pfizer and Moderna. Documents about this were obtained by the Epoch Times, which originally covered this story. So normally the CDC uses the HAN, which is the Health Alert Network, to issue important alerts. But then there was an email of Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis in May of 2021 that shows that there was a draft HAN alert that was ready to go to warn people about the risk of myocarditis. But instead of sending that notice out, CDC officials decided to, quote, include the information in the draft alert as part of a May 2021 clinical consideration guidance document, but they did not send out the HAN notice. So in essence, they downgraded the alert and just put it in a, quote, guidance document that very few people read. So this was one way that the CDC, they knew about the link between these vaccines and heart inflammation, i.e. heart attacks and strokes and sudden deaths and so on. They knew about the link, and there was a draft of sending out an alert, you know, a draft alert message, and they canned it. They blocked it on purpose. Why? To make sure that more people died. This is the CDC being weaponized against the American people. So that's your second example. Third example, the EPA covered up the East Palestine train derailment pollution fiasco. And there's a group called the Government Accountability Project, and this was covered in Reclaim the Net. They have announced a Freedom of Information request, FOIA, that's designed to get information about the censorship of online posts after the Norfolk Southern train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, which happened in February of 2023. So according to the Government Accountability Project, Facebook quickly began deleting or flagging any posts that talked about possible health risks related to the spread of all the burning material and the dioxins, of course, because this was polyvinyl chloride material, which produces dioxins when it's burned at those temperatures. So as Reclaim the Net reports, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and Facebook colluded in communications which saw posts from personal accounts censored. So one scientist who talked about this was Scott Smith, and he found elevated dioxin levels in East Palestine. And by the way, I was interviewing experts about this very topic at the time, and this is when I announced that our lab was acquiring a dioxin testing instrumentation, which is something that I'm being trained on, by the way. So I'll have some pretty big announcements for you coming up soon about dioxins and dioxin testing in our lab. Very cool stuff coming up. But Facebook just began deplatforming or censoring or flagging people. And there were many other things like texts that were harassing even regional EPA leaders who were on the ground telling them to remove their Facebook posts where they were encouraging people to think about the health implications of what may have happened. And Facebook would flag these with notices like, this post may go against our guidelines on suggested content. It's like unreal. So you mean if there's an industrial accident, a train accident, and highly toxic cancer-causing chemicals, dioxins, are released into the environment and start falling on people's homes and farms and roadways and children's schools and everything else, if you go on Facebook and say, whoa, we should think about the health implications, then you're going to be flagged with, you know, disinformation or misinformation. And the EPA pressured Facebook to do that. So here we go. The EPA weaponized against the American people. The EPA, just like the CDC and the FDA, wants you to die. The EPA wants you to die. The EPA is involved in crimes against the American people, covering up cancer-causing pollution. Why would they do that? I mean, thank God the Government Accountability Project is issuing this FOIA request, and maybe in a few months they'll have some documents that shed more light on this. But that's the third example of the United States federal government being weaponized against we the people. And that's not the last example. The last example comes from Jim Jordan. He's a chairman of the House Select Subcommittee. I mean, Congressman Jordan, of course, on the weaponization of the federal government on Wednesday. Okay, that's the actual name of this event. It's called the House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. See, Jim Jordan, who is, by the way, I would have supported him for Speaker of the House. Jim Jordan is the real deal. But they know that the government under Biden and the Democrats has been grotesquely weaponized against the American people. Federal agencies want the American people dead or censored. Well, actually a combination. They want you censored and they want you dead. They want you silenced and they want you to have cancer. You know, they want you to starve to death. But if you don't starve to death, they want you to be enslaved and silenced. Well, guess what Jim Jordan found? He got his hands on documents that reveal that federal agencies have flagged financial transactions that are moving in and out of financial institutions, where people use descriptions of the transactions that cite words such as MAGA and Trump. And specifically, this involves Zelle payment messages. All right, so if you use Zelle, Z-E-L-L-E, you know, that's an interbank instant money moving system, and you use terms like Trump or MAGA in any descriptions, even if you were buying like religious texts, it turns out, if you were buying a Bible and you use MAGA in the description, your transaction was flagged. If you shopped at Dick's Sporting Goods, your transaction was flagged. If you shopped at Cabela's or other, you know, outdoors places that might sell ammunition, for example, your transactions were flagged, and then you can be labeled an extremist or even a terrorist. So Jim Jordan issued a letter to the FinCEN director, that's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. He says, quote, the committee and select subcommittee have obtained documents indicating that following January 6, 2021, FinCEN distributed materials to financial institutions that, among other things, outlined the typologies of various persons of interest and provide financial institutions with suggested search terms and merchant category codes for identifying transactions on behalf of federal law enforcement. What? So if you shopped at a place that sells ammo, like Bass Pro Shops, right? If you bought a Bible, if you bought anything related to Trump or MAGA, the government flagged you as an extremist. In fact, he goes on, quote, according to this analysis, FinCEN warned financial institutions of, quote, extremism indicators that include transportation charges, bus tickets, rental cars, plane tickets for travel to areas with no apparent purpose. Like, I just want to take a vacation. Well, suddenly you're an extremist. You might be a terrorist. Why did you want to go somewhere? Or the purchase of books, including religious texts, or subscriptions to other media containing, quote, extremist views. That would probably be most of the conservative independent media, you know? Like, if you donated money to the Gateway Pundit, you would probably be flagged as an extremist, you know? I mean, or any independent conservative media. That's what they're doing. So talk about illegal, you know, Fourth Amendment violations. The federal government instructed banks to surveil the transaction nature, the transaction notes, and transaction merchants of all their customers, and to start flagging people as possible extremists. This is the weaponization of the United States federal government and the banking system against you and myself and all of us, against we the people. This is the fourth example of government turned terrorist. The federal government is terrorizing the American people. Not only does the CDC want you to die, and they will scrub their own warnings that could have saved lives, potentially. They're also at war with ivermectin, too, by the way. The FDA also approves biological weapons and calls them vaccines when they're not, making sure that the maximum number of people die. You know, and then not only does the EPA tell big tech to suppress anybody talking about the health dangers of dioxin fallout from East Palestine, but then the Biden regime tells banks to spy on the American people, spy on their financial transactions. Wow, folks, you need to watch my show, Decentralized TV. And that's at decentralize.tv. By the way, you can see every episode there, because that's where we talk about decentralization solutions for living, getting out of the banking system, using gold, silver, or gold backs, or privacy-oriented cryptocurrency, by the way. I mean, if you ever needed a reason to get out of the banking system as much as you can, this is it. You're considered a possible extremist or a criminal or a terrorist just by shopping at an outdoor sports shop or buying bus tickets to some destination that the government doesn't like. Oh, it's so suspicious. Why are you buying bus tickets? I mean, imagine. It's really incredible. So what Canada did to the Canadian truckers and the peaceful protesters there, seizing their bank accounts, this is what the Democrats and the Biden regime, if it stays in power, will eventually do to all of us. Probably if you donate money, you know, to the wrong political candidate, they'll freeze your bank account. They'll say, well, you're supporting terrorism. You know, I mean, come on, they're just going to say Trump is a terrorist. I mean, they've already said it. And then they're probably just going to say, well, if you donate money to Trump, then you're aiding and abetting terrorism, and that's a felony, and they'll come arrest you. I mean, it's crazy. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from donating to Trump, by the way. I think Trump deserves your donation at this point. He's been through, you know, hell to still be alive at this point and still running for president and in the lead, by the way. And I do have a special report on that coming up here. But just imagine if the Democrats stay in power, how much more they're going to weaponize every agency of this government against we the people. I mean, this is becoming a tyrannical, a frightening fascist, tyrannical authoritarian regime. They allow no freedom of speech. They allow no freedom of financial transactions. You are surveilled and spied upon at every turn. The government orders big tech who to censor. And the government agencies that are supposed to protect public health, like the FDA and the CDC, are actively working to destroy public health. the FDA isn't focused on food safety or pharmaceutical safety or public health. It's focused on, hey, how do they kill as many people as possible in America? Same thing with the CDC. Same thing with the DOD. The Pentagon has been weaponized against the American people. And of course, the open borders have been weaponized against the American people. There is almost no sector of the federal government that I can think of that hasn't turned against the people. We're at the point where the government despises democracy. They don't even want elections. They certainly don't want fair elections because nothing that they're doing is supported by or representative of the people. The people want these morons out of power. The people want real change. And right now, that real change is Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is, I mean, he blew away everybody in Iowa, and Nikki Haley isn't polling very well. She's not even close to Trump, even in New Hampshire coming up. And if Nikki Haley loses New Hampshire by, let's say, anything more than 10% compared to Trump, it's over for Nikki Haley. I mean, frankly, it should be over anyway. New World Order Nikki. No new taxes, Nikki. I mean, come on. She's just a Democrat pretending to be a Republican. She's like a Democrat self-identifying as a conservative, but she's actually also a globalist at the same time. She's got multiple personality disorder. The only people voting for Nikki are those suffering from Trump derangement syndrome that just can't stand the thought of Trump coming back into power and actually doing something to stop the weaponization of the government against us. And that is exactly why Trump is, at this point, the best choice to be back in power. Even if you don't agree with everything that he stands for, and I don't agree with everything about Trump, and I've been very vocal about that. But the one thing that I see now, especially today, is that Trump will, he will work overtime to block the federal government's weaponization against we the people. And he'll turn back on the energy exploration pipelines. You know, energy will be abundant and affordable again, and we won't be dependent on the Middle East for our energy needs. You know, Trump will shut down a lot of the sabotage that the federal government has been committing against our food and our energy infrastructure. Now, Trump's not perfect. He's got some blind spots, but compared to what's happening right now with Biden and the Democrats, oh my goodness, I don't think America can survive another term under Biden. I mean, they've almost completely destroyed the country at this point. And if it wasn't for people like, you know, Jim Jordan in the House or Rand Paul in the Senate, we'd be gone. There's only a few people saving this country at this point. And a few people on the Supreme Court, like several Trump nominees, for example. Without these few key people in place, we'd be done. Now, all this, the surveillance of the financial transactions and everything, this brings up why you need to have self-custody of your assets. And also why, at least in my opinion, I want to get everything as much as possible anyway out of the banking system. If I engage in transactions, I would much rather it be in Monero or a privacy crypto coin or even Bitcoin with proper mixing and so on for some anonymity. I don't want to do anything in the banking system if I can help it because it's all weaponized against you. All your records can one day be flagged as, you might be a terrorist. What? You bought some ammunition? I mean, I buy ammo. Doesn't make me a terrorist. Makes me a prepper. Makes me wise to have some ammo on hand. But it's absolutely incredible what these people are doing. I just wish more online merchants accepted crypto, by the way. In fact, I wish we did, and we've been working on that. And there may be some solutions coming up. But I would really love to use crypto as my day-to-day transactions for anything online. Now, in terms of in-person, I want to use gold and silver and goldbacks. And gold and silver coins, well, gold coins are for big bulk things like, hey, you want to sell your ranch or your house or your car? Here, have a certain number of gold coins. Silver is for smaller transactions, more day-to-day, like I'm at the farmer's market. Here, I have a silver coin. You know, give me $40 worth of, or whatever the price is, $30, $40 worth of ground beef or whatever you have there, right? And then goldbacks are gold that's highly divisible, where you have like 1/1000th of an ounce of gold in this goldback. It's actually in the polymer layers. and you can hand it to somebody. And that's right now, that's worth about $4 in terms of the gold back value, although that value varies based on the price of gold and some extra utility premium. And we are an affiliate for Goldbacks, by the way. So if you want to check out our affiliate page, it's verifiedgoldbacks.com. And if you make a purchase there, you can see all the photos. You can see my lab tests and all the purity tests that we did, the mass spec, the kiln test, all of it. It's really fascinating. I went through and painstakingly tested the Goldback bills to find out that the gold was actually in there. And we got greater than 100% recoveries, by the way. And you can replicate my tests. You can see the same thing that we saw. But if you purchase Goldbacks through that site, we earn a small percentage. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but we earn a small percentage. So that helps support us as well. Or if you want gold and silver coins, just go to metalswithmike.com. We don't earn any percentage off that, but that company, Treasure Island Company, does pay me as a sponsor from time to time to mention them. And I'm happy to do that because they give such great service, honest service, guaranteed discreet delivery. I've worked with them for many, many years, and they've helped thousands of our listeners get squared away with physical gold and silver self-custody. So those are a couple of sponsors in those spaces. Just, you know, do your own research. Obviously, get your own financial advice. But I'm telling you, if you're whatever you do in the system, on the grid, is going to be tracked and flagged and surveilled and weaponized against you. That's obvious from this day forward. I mean, Jim Jordan, you know, God bless that man. He just exposed this for everybody to see. And you can't trust the banks because they're all regulated by the government. So they cooperate with the government on everything. The government says, oh, do this. The banks say, yes, sir, how high should I jump? You know, or the government says, deplatform these people. They're Trump supporters. And the banks go, yes, sir, sir. Or JP Morgan is just like, we'll just, you know, delete all the Trump supporters. They do that. That should be illegal. And for some reason, it's not. I mean, do you realize in America, it's illegal to discriminate against somebody because of the color of their skin, for example, or if they're a female, and it would probably soon be illegal to discriminate against somebody because they're transgender, but it's not illegal to discriminate against Trump supporters or Christians or to discriminate against people who have white skin. Did you know that? It's legal for a business to discriminate against white people or even Asian people, but not to discriminate against black people. I mean, why can't we just say all discrimination is wrong? We need a new law, and perhaps Trump is the only president who would sign this. We need a new law that says that no financial institution can debank people because of their political views, and that no big tech platform can deplatform people because of their political views, and so on and so forth. No educational institution can deny someone admission because of the color of their skin, even if it's white skin, or because of their political views, and so on. I mean, we need a universal blanket, like no discrimination against people because of their viewpoints, if they happen to be white or black or Asian or Hispanic or anything, Native American, you name it. You know, the civil rights movement only protected people of color and certain minority groups, but it never extended those protections to white people. Isn't that amazing? So white people are now being, you know, just fired and punished and deplatformed and silenced, and all the Democrats are totally fine with that. It's insane. I mean, it's so crazy. The only way that young white males can even get into college or get a job or move up in society is to pretend to be a woman. And then they can check the transgender box, you know? And then, oh, suddenly you're admitted to college. Suddenly you get the loans. Suddenly you got the job. Suddenly you're running the Pentagon or whatever, you know? Suddenly you're an admiral. Suddenly you're the CEO of United Airlines. Drag queens running that place. Did you know that? Suddenly you're part of the all-gay helicopter crew, you know, in the U.S. Army or whatever. Transgenderism is now at the top of the hierarchy of society. And it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, if somebody wants to be transgender in their own private lives and cross-dress and whatever, go for it. You know, whatever floats your silly boat. But don't use that as a bludgeon against everybody else in society. I mean, we live in a society now where meritocracy has been completely destroyed. You don't get anywhere in government, in academia, or in the corporate world by having merit, by proving that you can do the job. No, you get somewhere by checking off the check boxes. You got to have the right LGBTQ status. You got to have the right skin color. You got to have the right type of speech. You got to support Democrats. You got to believe in climate change. You know, all this bullcrap. And I believe that Trump as president could help stop all that. It's one more reason to get behind supporting Trump right now. In fact, let me mention, I'm going to run a special report here, just a short one. And I think I'll title it Why America Needs to Rally Behind Donald Trump at this moment. I wouldn't have said that 6 months ago. Things have changed substantially. Today, I'm saying it. Trump is right. We need to come together. We need to get behind Trump as the only now viable candidate on the Republican side who can help stop some of this government insanity. Now, I'm not naive. I don't think Trump is going to save America. He's not. America's done, folks. America's going down. I'm sorry to break the news to you if this is the first time you're hearing this. Most of Western civilization is done. I mean, we're just in the free fall of gravity phase before we hit the ground and, you know, collision with terrain. That's the chapter we're in right now. But the question is, who do you want in the White House during the collapse? That's really the only question. Do you want Joe Biden or do you want Donald Trump? And neither one can save America, but Biden wants to destroy America, whereas Trump wants to save America, although he won't be able to. But if things get crazy, I would rather have Trump there than Biden or Obama or O'Biden or whoever else the crazy, insane Democrats are going to throw in there, like Gruesome Newsom or, you know, Michael Obama, whoever they want to come up with. It's just going to be another destroyer. So let me run that special report on Trump. And then after that, we'll do the interview with John Williams. And I'll be back with you tomorrow with another podcast. Might also be short. I'm doing some really intense training schedule stuff right now. I'll tell you about it later. But because of that, my week has been really abbreviated in terms of podcasts and interviews. But you're going to love this report and you're going to love the interview with John Williams coming up. So enjoy. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Well, Texas Senator Ted Cruz has endorsed Donald Trump for president. And Vivek Ramaswamy has endorsed Trump. In fact, well, there are all kinds of governors and senators and leaders who are endorsing Trump. And after Trump's decisive win, and just blowout win in Iowa, it's very clear that Trump is the only choice for the GOP leadership, the nomination position. And given the horrendous circumstances of what the Democrats are offering America, it's also clear that Trump is the choice for America. Now, as much as I have a few reservations about Trump that I've mentioned before, one of the things that Trump said after his victory in Iowa was that it's time to unite behind Trump for president, and it's time for America to heal and come together and stop playing around with these globalists like Nikki Haley, or New World Order Nikki, as she's sometimes called. And just get behind Trump, get Trump into office, and work with him the best we can. Despite the issues that he's got, you know, with Big Pharma and just endless support of Israel's bombing of Gazans and so on, Trump is, he's the best choice for America at this point. So I'm going to say also, along with Senator Ted Cruz, that it is time to get behind Trump and make sure that the Democrats are removed from power. Trump's not perfect. We're never going to get a perfect candidate. And I pray that he doesn't make the same mistakes in the second administration, well, his third administration, that he made in his first administration. For example, keeping traitors around him and, you know, appointing traitors and backstabbers into positions of power, like attorney general, for example. I pray that he has learned those lessons the hard way and that he will do much better this time. And I think he will. I don't think Trump is naive at this point. I think he's seen enough. I think he knows exactly how toxic the Democrats are and how much the radical left wants to destroy America And Trump is going to do the best he can, I believe, to try to salvage America. And even then, it probably won't be enough. But hey, at least America will go down fighting. And then we will rebuild out of the ashes. And that's one of the main messages I have for you today. I've said this before, but it's worth sort of restating. Trump can't save America, but he's still the best choice for president at this point. I mean, the best viable choice. You know, Dr. Shiva is fantastic. And I love Dr. Shiva's ideas. But an independent candidate just isn't viable in our two-party dominated system, sadly. It's the same story with RFK Jr. You know, for a while, I thought RFK Jr. might be the best choice for president. And then I learned more about who he would nominate for the U.S. Supreme Court. You know, disastrous left-wing judges, most likely. And I learned that RFK Jr. really, you know, he hasn't spoken out against the genocide in Gaza. He's so pro-Israel that he can't even speak out on behalf of the women and children who are being bombed and killed in Gaza, which tells me that he's not the man of principle that I thought he was. That when it comes down to it, he will appease his Israeli donors rather than tell the truth about a very important humanitarian issue. And so that's when I lost real faith in RFK Jr. as a potential presidential candidate. Now, I know that Trump is all pro-Israel as well. I've been very open about that. I've been very critical about that. And look, there's nothing wrong with supporting Israel per se. It's just that the current, you know, far right, the Netanyahu cabal that's running Israel is a genocidal war criminal regime. And I have a big problem with how much control Israel has over the United States Senate and the administration and the press and so on. I mean, my goodness, why does America leap to defend Israel, but America does nothing to defend America's own borders, you know? There's a problem there. Should be America first, not Israel first. Nothing against Israel. It's just, we got to defend our own borders first, for God's sake. But no, we send the entire U.S. Navy to Israel as if U.S. taxpayers should just fund Israel's defense no matter what. It's absurd. But how is Trump going to handle that? Well, I believe that Trump will try to extricate us from that conflict, and he will try to de-escalate. But at the end of the day, he's still going to support Israel. Because as I mentioned in yesterday's podcast, no one can become president in America unless they bow down to Israel. It really is that simple. So publicly, Trump's going to say he's all in for Israel no matter what. But then I think behind the scenes, he will try to slowly de-escalate and remove the U.S. from that situation if possible. Although I know he moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, but that was part of his deal with Israel to be president in his first administration. You know, he had to do a deal with Israel. And I think he's had to do another deal with Israel. But behind the scenes, Trump doesn't want America in a major war in the Middle East, you know, dying in a fight with Iran on behalf of Israel. That's not what Trump is looking for. So the bottom line is, the way the field looks right now, it's Trump. It's all Trump, or we die as a nation. It's Trump or collapse, basically. And it might be collapse under Trump, too, but at least in that case, Trump would be in charge instead of a bunch of authoritarian left-wing Democrats who support censorship and child mutilations and jailing their political enemies. Now, speaking of jailing political enemies, I do hope that Trump runs investigations and prosecutions of all the traitors who tried to destroy America, who rigged the 2020 election, and who ran all this, you know, fake intel against Trump during his first administration. It is time to lock her up. It is time to build the wall. It is time to drain the swamp. And although I know the swamp really can't be drained until a collapse happens, Trump can make a lot of progress, and he can really frustrate the tyrants and the authoritarians and the anti-Americans. And we're going to need Trump in the White House when the radical left activates all their occupying enemy forces, the illegals that have invaded our country and now occupy America and are just awaiting orders to cause havoc and attack infrastructure, carry out sabotage and assassinations and so on. I would much rather have Trump as president to respond to that than a Democrat that would just sit there and say, oh, this is great. You know, it's a peaceful sabotage, or they would say it's a peaceful uprising against America. It's mostly peaceful. Trump wouldn't put up with that. At least I hope not. And what Trump needs to do is he needs to somehow deputize every former military person, former law enforcement or active, and even probably most concealed carry holders. He needs to activate them all to defend America against the saboteurs. Just defend America, no matter what that looks like. If the chaos gets crazy, you need to defend America, and you are authorized to take action locally to stop the terrorists, to stop the saboteurs, and stop the invasion. Don't wait for orders from headquarters. You know, get things done at the county level with local law enforcement, at the community level to protect your communities. Stop the invasion, stop the violence, stop the, well, the revolution from the left that's going to happen once Trump gets into the White House. So this is going to be a wild ride, that's for sure. But at this point, folks, and I'm open to any comments if you disagree with me, but looks like it's all Trump from here forward. It's Trump or we die as a nation. That's the way I see it at this point. Thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com. And also, of course, the founder of Brighteon.com. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And today we're joined by John Williams, who has a company called Great Credit Fast. And I love his videos on Brighteon. And he talks about finance and banking and, of course, credit from time to time, but also a lot of much bigger issues like what's happening with housing prices and Federal Reserve changes in interest rates and things like that. I think he's a brilliant guy and a great communicator. I've been watching his videos for quite some time. This is the first chance I've had an opportunity to speak with him. So, Mr. John Williams, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fan of your videos. I love watching your videos. I think you have a great communication style and you're educating people on a lot of topics. Can you give us a little bit of just an introduction and background for our audience since this is the first time you've been on my show?
Yeah, sure. I was a real estate agent in Beverly Hills from 2009 to 2019, saved up money and became a real estate investor. And about 2017, picked up a deal that turned out very well. And then from there, just continued to invest and grew on social media and stopped becoming a, you know, stopped working in terms of as an agent and got into e-commerce, building out a personal brand and online businesses.
Okay, well, that's a great resume. And yet, you know, what you talk about goes beyond, way beyond like a typical real estate investor, because we've all seen videos of just sort of mainstream real estate investors. You know, it's like buy these disheveled homes and put in a few thousand dollars and fix them up and sell it, you know, before the cheap new carpet starts to show wear, you know, that kind of thing. But you go way beyond that. I mean, you're talking about personal financial strategies for people to help them get through, I think, some pretty crazy scenarios that I believe are coming. Why do you dare to talk about more than just a typical real estate investor?
Well, I think typical real estate investors are going to walk into a big problem. I think the entire economy is fake, and everything that we've seen since, you know, even 2008, some could argue, but especially 2020 with eviction moratoriums and all of these quote unquote tenant protections and all these different protections that have come across the economy. All they've done is paint a false sense of security that a lot of people have used to take on excess debt. And as they continue to increase interest rates, what's ultimately going to happen is I think probably the greatest rug pull in American history is in front of us.
Oh, wow. So you believe then, I assume, that interest rates are going to continue to actually climb? You don't think the Fed's close to a pivot?
I think they're going to stay higher for longer.
I see. And every month that they stay high is pain for anybody on credit.
Yeah, I mean, you have $2 trillion in corporate debt that has to get refied, or $1.8 trillion over the next 18 months. You have a $2.7 trillion in commercial real estate that has to get refinanced. or worked out from now until 2027. You have a lot of stress that's being held right now from local regional banks. And I think we're going to probably see a lot of consolidation inside of banking as well. So I think we're going to walk into a pretty decent sized storm here.
Do you think a lot of commercial real estate investors and holders are going to lose their bags, so to speak, and then the banks are going to have to end up repossessing a lot of that property? We're going to see fire sales, things like that?
I don't think it'll be traditional fire sales like what we saw in 2008, 9, 10, 11. I think what we're going to start seeing here is a lot of capital coming in from like BlackRock, Blackstone, a lot of these very, very deep-pocketed institutional players that are going to step in and start buying a lot of that bad debt.
Okay, so that's going to centralize more power over commercial real estate into the hands of the few once again.
Yeah.
And so what, the small investors are going to be the first to be kind of shaken out of the system?
What I believe is going to happen is the next 1 to 3 years are going to be the most important for everyday Americans that are looking to build out a little bit of wealth. They have to be really strategic with what they do and make sure that they can, you know, get their slice of the American dream before. It's almost too late, but you know, after 2027, 2028, when this starts hitting, we're going to start seeing a lot of challenges for those looking to build wealth, and we're going to start seeing the middle class is going to essentially get eliminated.
Okay, I want to talk about that in more detail. First, let me just plug your website, and for our audience, this is not a sponsored interview or anything, but I just want to, as a courtesy, talk about your website, Great Credit Fast. I'm not a customer of your website. I don't use any credit, but I imagine most people do. So can tell us about, you know, your service. How do you help people with their credit?
Yeah, so in 2020 and 2021, if you had, you know, bad credit, it really didn't impact you that much. You could easily get funding and financing. You could buy a car, you could buy a house in most cases. It wasn't that important. But now what's starting to happen is banks and lenders are starting to tighten up. And as they tighten up, if you have bad credit, it gets a lot harder to get funding and financing. And what I think is going to happen is I believe as banks start to suffer more losses, they're going to be even more careful with who they lend money to. And so having the best credit score and putting yourself into a position to where you're able to get funding is going to be one of the easiest ways for people to, you know, level up. If you have bad credit and you're viewed as high risk, it's going to be pretty hard to go out there and invest when things start to get a little bit more dicey.
So what kinds of strategies do you teach people in order to improve their credit?
Well, so what we do is we handle the entire credit repair process for them. So we don't teach, you know, how to fix credit. We actually do that for you. Oh. So we handle the entire repair process. What we handle is late payments, medical bills, charge-offs, foreclosures, bankruptcies, repossessions, anything like that, any negative item on your credit report. We'll assist with the disputing process. How it works is we have a 5-day free trial. So the first 5 days, we don't charge anything. The first 24 hours of that 5-day trial, they'll have a consultation with someone on the team. We just hired a couple people from Equifax. They'll review the report. They'll tell them what they think the likelihood of getting these items removed would be and roughly how long. And if it makes sense, you know, we'd love to help. And if not, then we would just cancel. We wouldn't charge anything.
And then do you, when you do start charging, do you charge, I don't know, but is it like a percentage of what you're able to write off for the customer, or is it a flat fee, or how does it work?
We charge $229 per month. No contract, no commitment, no hidden fees, nothing like that. And we give the client access to a portal where they can see everything that we're doing, all the letters that we're sending out 24/7 in real time.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then I've heard a lot of stories of people being able to discharge, you know, substantial medical bills, for example. Mm-hmm. What kinds of successes are you able to achieve, or your company, for people?
We're getting great success, but we're also very strategic with the clients which we work with. So if a client comes to us with a situation that we think we might not be able to help with, we would rather not take that client on. So we're careful with the clients that we pick. And so we choose the right clients based on, you know, their specific circumstance and what we think we can do for them. So the clients in which we take on, we get great results for.
Okay.
But we also turn down about 20% of clients.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm curious too, then, what are your clients saying to you when they contact you for your services? Like, what got them into credit trouble in the first place?
Believe it or not, it's we see a mixed bag, but one of the main things is a bad relationship. You know, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, someone over, you know, maybe not conveying, you know, when a bill comes in or a statement comes in or something happens. But there, it's a lot in the relationship department. We see a lot of issues there.
Okay, that was an unexpected answer. But yeah, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a little bit of marriage counseling along with the credit repair, right?
Yeah, well, so, like they have an issue that comes in to us. Like their credit end up getting impacted negatively because of that.
Right. No, I've heard of that.
Of a variety of them.
Yeah. I know someone who was married. It's a woman I know who married a guy, and then they consolidated all their student debt. For example, it's like federal student debt, but the husband had the most debt. But now it became their joint debt, and then they got divorced, and he walked away and left and refused to pay. So she had to pay all the student debt bills. Otherwise, her credit would be impacted. So that's the kind of thing you're talking about.
Yeah. So it sounds like a one-off situation, but that's pretty common. We see that a lot. And also debt consolidations. People believe that, hey, I have $50,000 in credit card debt. I'll just do a consolidation. What that actually means is when you have a debt consolidation and you bring in a company to negotiate that debt down, they're negotiating on behalf of you with the creditor so that that creditor will take X amount and they'll write off, Y, the difference. But the consumer, they no longer have to deal with, the threat of being sued. But you still have that negative item that goes on one's credit report for 7 years. So There's still a really big negative impact and a big ding to somebody's credit report when they do a debt consolidation in most cases.
What about credit card debt? Because I hear that there's record debt now. I mean, we see it in the news headlines. Most Americans are putting more on credit cards than they ever have in their lives, yep. Including groceries and things like that. What are you seeing in the credit card arena?
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing right now, retail credit card interest rates are over 30%. So like Whoa. A Mason card, the Nordstrom card, like, it's pretty crazy. And the average right now, the average American has about $6,000 in credit card debt. So it's substantial. Now, in 2008, right as the great financial crisis started happening, interest rates on credit cards are about 12.5%. So now, you're 25-26%. People might think, oh, it just means double interest. It doesn't. If you use a credit card interest calculator and you put in $5,000, $10,000 in debt, and you type in your minimum payment, people will be shocked when they see that it's 10 years, 15 years, 18 years to get out of debt.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. And are you also advising people to do things like make extra payments on their home mortgages or, accelerate the payment schedule where they can to get out of debt?
Yeah, I mean, my advice is always to pay off the highest interest rate credit card first.
Makes sense.
You want to focus on getting out of the highest interest rate card. And if you have a great credit score, let's say a 720, 730, 740, in many cases, you could qualify for something called a balance transfer credit card, where you can transfer high interest rate credit card debt to a 0% APR card for between 12 and 21 months, no interest. So if you can transfer debt from, 20 or 25% interest to zero, that's always a win.
All right, let's talk about macroeconomics then. One of the things that's causing people to experience so much debt is the declining value of the dollar, and they're losing purchasing power. And I know you've talked about this with all the money printing. And, the dollar losing its global dominant position, as the world's reserve currency, that's slipping away very rapidly with the rise of BRICS nations and so on. Do the people that you talk to, your customers and so on, do they realize that even when they're not in debt, if they're just holding dollars, that they're also losing money every day?
Yeah, they are. A lot of people that watch my channel know where I stand on this. And I talk a lot about BRICS and I talk a lot about what's happened with the dollar. I mean, they say that 17% is the number. That's how much the dollar has lost in value since 2020. I think it's probably greater than that. So 25 or 30% or more, depending on, of course, what you're buying. But, 20, 30% is probably what we've lost in purchasing power the last 3 years. So you have to ask yourself, if we're walking into this, green agenda and all these different, things, so these are all inflationary pressures and a lot of headwind for the dollar.
So then I'm curious, do your clients ever ask you, like, what should I do with my savings? Is the answer, smart real estate investments, or do you ever even get into that area?
Yeah, I mean, I would always suggest gold, silver, land. You can't go wrong. Especially land if you have a water source associated. Yeah. Personal brands, website. Like if you have an online equity, that's definitely going to help as well. Like if you have an online business. But putting yourself into a position to where you're just not sitting all in fiat and you're putting yourself in a place to where, you can pivot is going to be of real value. We're walking into an era I believe over the next 5 years that will be unlike anything we've ever seen before in history. In the past, you know, people's parents would tell them, save money for a rainy day. If you save 100 grand today, in 2 years, you might have 30, 40,000 in purchasing power, 50,000 in purchasing power. And what is that going to get you, a used car?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a very rapid devaluation with those numbers that you were just spitting out, like a 50% decline over 2 years. So, you know, that's that. What would that be? That would be like a 36% devaluation per year, right? Something like that. So that, I mean, really? Are you thinking it's going to get that bad?
So here's what I'm looking at. So in 2021, there were 11 cities in America that had pilot programs for universal basic income. In 2022, there's 82 cities across 29 states. Right now, there's hundreds of cities working in these different universal basic income pilot programs. What we're walking into is a situation where the affordability crisis is getting much, much, much worse every single month. And we're going to start to see a scenario over sometime this year where we're going to likely see more people demanding government assistance. And as that starts to happen and universal basic income becomes more and more and more mainstream, how are they going to fund it? They're going to fund it through printing more money, taxes.
Yes.
They're going to continue pushing this. So you look at 2005, 6, 7, 8, what happened? It was basically a disaster created by humans and solved by humans. What we're walking into is we're going to walk into a problem created by humans, solved by AI and technology. And that's going to be a situation where a lot of people are going to be pushed out of work. And I think that's all going to be coupled in with a universal basic income coming very, very, very soon.
Okay, I want to talk to you about that in particular. I'm really glad you brought that up. But first, let me just remind our audience, we're talking with John Williams, whose website is greatcreditfast.com. And John Williams also has a very popular channel on Brighteon.com, which is our video platform, as well as YouTube. He's got quite a few hundred thousand subscribers on YouTube as well. So you can follow him. What's your channel name on YouTube, just for the audience here?
This is John Williams.
Okay, this is John Williams. Got it. Because your name is actually pretty common. And there's also another, you know, the shadow... what's it called? Shadow Stats. That's another John Williams that talks about the real interest rates, right? So,
And there's also John Williams, the famous composer.
Composer, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So you probably get all those questions. Are you this John Williams? No. All right. So greatcreditfast.com is the website. You know, just as a disclaimer, again, this is not a paid promotion. I haven't used your service, but it sounds really effective to me. And it sounds like you know what you're talking about, and I listen to your videos, and I think that you offer really great financial advice. So let me ask you the next question here. We see a trend right now where more and more people are taking on debt to buy small everyday things. And we see, for example, the self-checkout lanes at Walmarts offer like a buy now, pay later for things like, you know, toilet paper and Pop-Tarts and whatever. And there are a lot of, you know, finance your pizza services. You need a pizza today and you can pay for it over the next 6 weeks. How concerning should we be about this trend?
This trend's here to stay. We're walking into, imagine if someone were to tell you could finance a pizza 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. You would have thought that was crazy, right? We're going to walk into this and it's just going to get crazier and crazier. We're probably going to see like a 15-year auto loan. We're going to see a 60-year home loan. We're going to start seeing more and more and more of this. It's going to be, I think, something that people need to be very, very weary of and very cautious of. When you ask yourself, should I take on this debt? If that debt is not going to make you more money, the answer is no. Like, you want to reduce your expenses as much as possible to try to get a hold of the situation, not make it worse. Because as inflation gets worse and interest rates, you know, probably stay higher for longer, that little pizza, that little issue here and there, it's just going to get harder and harder and harder to manage down the road.
Absolutely. And it seems like, as the WEF would say, you know, you will own nothing and be happy. But I think we should change that. You will own nothing and rent everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you will rent everything. And it's never a good deal in the long run to do that. You know, because you end up owning nothing, but you've already paid out all this cash. And 10 years later, what do you have to show for it? Nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
And your assets aren't working for you. But I see, well, kind of next question. I see a real lack of education in money and finance, a lack of literacy. You know, the typical person does not understand compounding interest or the rule of 72 or anything like this. They don't know how money works over time. Is that something, I mean, I know you've talked about this, but, you know, what are your thoughts on how big of a deal that is, that that the average consumer doesn't understand how money works?
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I think anyone wants to be or should be right now is average, especially considering that the bar is so low. And most people, they just swipe all day long. They go on TikTok and they just swipe. Learning or taking in new information becomes a real challenge. What you're looking at is you're looking at an erosion of society that's happening. And people need to look around. Everyone around you, as they're starting to get softer, now's the time to get sharper and smarter and save more and try to earn more and do everything that you could possibly do to get into a better and better position. Because as people are going to start to be, you know, pushed off the edge financially, they're going to start selling off assets. So the more you learn, the more you, you can earn, really. It's cliche, but, you know, the more you're sitting there learning and studying and advancing yourself, the better off you're going to be.
Well, and especially then, you know, you mentioned the rise of AI and perhaps a universal basic income that'll be paid to people who are displaced by AI jobs. So that's a great segue. Let's go right into that. I've talked about this quite a bit in my podcast as well. And I'm working on an AI project right now. Like literally, I was doing that at 1 a.m. last night with a couple of devs. And I've come to realize that right now, today, 50% of white collar jobs are obsolete, but the AI agents just haven't been rolled out yet across all those corporations to displace those jobs. But the tech exists, which means in my mind, over the next 24 months, we're going to see 50% of white collar workers just given a pink slip, you know, out the door. We can replace a person who costs, you know, $30 an hour with electricity on a machine that costs like 10 cents an hour, you know, like that's here now. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Google just replaced 30,000 employees in their ad department, right? You have IBM replaced 7,400 employees. Bill Gates came out saying in 18 to 24 months, you're going to start seeing massive, massive disruption with AI. The big question is, some people say that we're not going to see a crash and nothing, you know, we're not going to see any problem. How can people hold on to assets such as homes and second homes and, you know, even their cars? And how can they hold on to all of these different things if real wages are going to continue to erode and inflation's going to get worse and there's going to be massive job loss? Like, I don't see it. I think we're going to see AI really kind of throw gas on this fire.
So, I mean, you've alluded to this, but, you know, one path for the worker who is displaced, which initially that will tend to be people who engage in generative content creation processes, you know, such as graphic artists and script writers and email writers and business proposal authors and so on. But also document classifiers, right? Like people who look at documents and see, you know, does this fit in this category? You know, is this a consumer complaint or whatever? Or this form coming in, you know, has the person filled out the form correctly? Like all that's going to be obsolete. But one path is that these people can learn new skills. They can learn how to maybe use AI, or they can take advantage. They can harness this technology and uplift themselves to things like project managers, but there are only so many project manager positions in the customer service department, right?
Yep. Yeah, we're going to see a lot of people being forced to pivot in their jobs, in their careers. So if you're a business owner and you're not finding ways in which you could reduce your expenses with AI, that could be a mistake. Because as the business owner, you know, the goal for the business is to supply a superior product to market, and to, you know, do so at a profitable stand, right? Like being able to reduce your overall expenses and invest in the customer experience. You're going to see a lot of companies focusing more and more and more on that, as, you know, people are going to demand such high wages just to, you know, for basic work. That is over. We're going to start seeing a lot more cost cutting walking into this.
Yeah, and it's not like the employee can even say, okay, I'll work for 10% less, because the business owner is like, no, I can pay 99.9% less for a machine to do the job. Or maybe the machine is like 20 grand up front, but then it pays itself off in 1 week versus paying this human worker, right? So of course the business owner is just going to buy the machine.
Yeah, I mean, look at what's happening right now in California. They have a $20 an hour fast food minimum wage, right? Yeah. $20. You could buy one of those flippies, the AI, I think it was like $24,000. you know, pays itself off. I mean, this thing's going to work 24/7, right? It's not going to call up sick. It's not going to sue you. It's not going to have any, you know, any type of legal problems. And, you know, within a few months, this thing's probably going to pay itself off.
Yeah.
Because he's probably going to be able to do the job of two or three people compared to, you know, that $20 an hour minimum wage worker.
Well, that brings me to the next question then. Thanks for bringing that up, John, which is the replacement of the blue collar workers. So, you know, we're talking about software AI agents right now, office jobs and, you know, composing emails and things like that. But fast forward a couple more years, you know, China's going to be rolling these humanoid robots off their production lines in 2025. You know, they have this massive, you know, strategic ministry blueprint of what they're going to do. We're going to have millions of humanoid robots and also, you know, companies in the U.S. You got Tesla and you've got Boston Robotics and so on. Is it Boston Research or Boston Robotics? But you know who I'm talking about. But we're going to see humanoid robots everywhere in 4 years' time for sure. And then what about all the Amazon fulfillment workers? You know, what about all the packagers? What about the restockers at the grocery store, right? Obsolete. Obsolete.
You know how many little robots Amazon just brought in? 750,000. They have 750,000 robots. They have 1.6 million employees, right? You look at how fast this is growing, going from 1.6 million employees to bringing 750,000 robots in essentially overnight. Like, we're walking into a situation where they're going to go from 1.6 million to maybe in, call it 5-6 years, maybe they have a couple hundred thousand employees.
Right.
And then they have several million robots basically running all the fulfillment centers. And the fulfillment centers will probably never run better. And, you know, it'll run like a clock, like an old clock.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's clear. But, you know, you always hear these businesses like Amazon saying, oh, we're not going to replace any humans. We value every human worker. We're just going to augment them. And it's BS. Of course you're going to replace the human workers. Of course you are. You can't wait to replace those workers.
I mean, and in some way, like, I don't blame a lot of companies for looking at AI. Because if you look at what's happened to the American worker over the last 5 years, the demands are almost not justifiable for the employer. Like, they want, many employees want to be paid such an exorbitant wage, but, you know, they want to sit on their phone all day, or they want right. to, you know, call off last second. There's, you know, we've seen a pretty big kind of erosion in performance. But what I find very fascinating is where we're actually headed. They're saying that this is actually a good thing, that people should work less and people should, like, Elon Musk came out with a high universal basic income. It was like several thousand dollars a month. And then they were also talking about a 3-day work week and a 4-day work week. So yeah, I mean, we're in, I think, the beginning stages of this big push.
All right. So let's talk about exactly that scenario. So with all these millions of displaced workers, there won't be enough jobs for most of them. I mean, a few of them will innovate. They'll be entrepreneurial, you know, like you, and they'll find new ways to contribute to society that robots can't replicate. But the vast majority are going to be obsolete. So now you have, let's say, tens of millions of Americans, you know, eventually jobless, homeless, can't pay the bills. So you're saying, and you just quoted Elon Musk, that they're going to roll out a UBI, and they're just going to put money into people's hands so that people can continue to purchase. They can be consumers, but not producers. But, you know, come on, Austrian economics tells us that that whole system doesn't last very long because it's not mm-hmm. sustainable. Where do you think it goes?
Yeah, so here's what I think is going to happen. If you go to c40.org, which I'm sure you've probably visited that website before, they say, you know, how many new properties they need to develop, how many homes they need, right? But what they're saying is that a lot of people are going to be living in these cities, right? And you're aware of that, right? When you look at the office problem right now with office real estate, if before someone would buy a building, let's just call it a $100 million building, right? $100 million deal. And they, if you go here, if you click on, if you go up to the top and then you click on what we do.
Yeah.
Then you go to energy and buildings.
Energy and buildings.
To the right. Energy and buildings.
Yep. Oh, I got it. Okay.
Uh-huh. And then. And it says cities will pledge, new cities will be net zero carbon by 2030. But scroll down a little bit more. And it says right up top, a little bit higher, it will tell you the need for buildings, the second paragraph, the need for buildings and infrastructure will only intensify. By 2025, we will need to build 1 billion new homes. About 60% of buildings that will exist by 2050 haven't been built yet. Now, many people say that's never going to happen. You know, this is crazy. But if you click on who we are, you'll see it's the World Bank. It is Google. Right. It is every big company. And so what's going to happen when you look at what Joe Biden is doing right now, he's issuing $35 billion in dry powder to developers and builders to convert these office buildings to residential affordable housing. And right. So when you click on our cities, what it shows you, San Francisco, LA, New York City, Boston, Philly, all the big cities are all part of it. So,
well, but John, I would say, and I don't, I mean, you're free to disagree, but you've heard my podcast. I would say this is all theater because they don't plan to have these people around. You know, I mean, honestly, they're not going to pay people to sit around and build new cities for them. They're going to exterminate them, you know, they kill them softly.
Yeah, the last few years are interesting. And like, if you look at, you know, what's happened since 2020 and kind of the chain of events that are unfolding, we're walking into, probably that scenario. But there's a lot of people that are still going to get pushed into a lot of these cities.
Yeah, I mean, this could be the cover story for a while, I would imagine. But ultimately, you know, if you're a globalist and you're running planet Earth, let's say, and you're probably looking at history like, wow, you know, human cognition was really great. It got us to this point where humans could create microchips and AI systems and language models. And now, you know, thanks, humans. See you later. We're done. Like, from this point on, they're like, we'll just do artificial data, artificial intelligence, AGI, all of it. Like, the cognition phase is here. Why do they even need humans around any longer, right?
Yeah. What do you see, like, in terms of timeline? How do you see it planning out?
Well, of course, I think depopulation has already begun in one way. But it's interesting. I interviewed Zach Voorhees just the other day, and he said that he thinks that the globalists tell themselves that they're being very polite and nice in the soft kill because something far worse, some far worse fate humanity would be facing, like a very violent die-off, you know, mass impoverishment and disease and war and so on that would kill many more people more harshly. So the globalists tell themselves that they're actually doing like a gentle euthanasia plan. But clearly it's already begun at some level. It has already begun. I mean, it hasn't really taken off yet. You know, we're not looking at billions of people dead, but I can't look at this plan and say that I believe anybody in a position of power gives one single crap about human beings. They don't care. No. Yeah.
If you're to live in one of those office buildings that are converted into affordable housing, when you look at what's happening with the border, all the millions of people that are coming across, you have to ask yourself, where are they going? They're all going to cities, right?
Right.
So as people start losing their homes and they start walking into a bad spot financially, they're going to have no choice but to do some type of welfare type of subsidy. But it would not surprise me to where we see some type of UBI connected with, you have to take certain things and do certain things to be able to qualify.
Well, see, that's the ticket right there. So if someone watching this, you know, if you don't get out of debt and you end up dependent on a UBI, then basically you're going to be in a contract with the government that's giving you that money. You're going to have to behave in ways that they demand. Like, you could be cut off. I mean, we've seen this, and like Brazil has cut off welfare for families that refuse to vaccinate their children. Right.
Yep.
So vaccine compliance, or who knows what else, speech compliance probably is going to be part of you receiving your UBI. That's coming.
Yeah. I mean, when has the government ever given anyone anything for free?
No, I mean, they had to take it from someone else first.
Right.
Or print the money, which is stealing from everybody at the same time.
Right.
But kind of getting back to the practical matters here, then, you know, our audience, they're typically very savvy people, many very successful people, some quite wealthy people. And they're trying to project, you know, what's going to happen here so they can stay out of trouble in all of this. How do you think a person listening to this interview should strategize their own, you know, financial portfolio plans for the next few years?
Yeah, so I think that money is options and options is wealth. Like, having a second passport might be something that I think will be of tremendous value down the road. if America continues to go into this direction, probably a direction that's going to be far worse, having an option to where you can go to a second country and being a resident there, that might be nice. Having land in which you can grow food, you can drink off land, that's probably going to obviously have substantial value. Having not just dollars, but potentially maybe even some Swiss francs, having some gold, some silver, some crypto, having ways you can make money outside of your former employer, your current employer, but putting yourself into a position where you can pivot and move.
Yeah, exactly. I think that makes perfect sense. Be really nimble because we don't know what's coming. Do you think that there's a risk of bank bail-ins?
I do. Yeah, if you look at Dodd-Frank, how that was written, like we're walking into, you know, they've mentioned, Janet Yellen's mentioned, issuing some type of protections. Even in Switzerland, they were talking about putting caps on how much people can take out of their accounts and, you know, putting in fees and potentially, you know, doing different things to prevent people from accessing their money. I think that this could very well happen where they, I don't know if they're going to bail in on everybody's deposits. People always say, oh, you know, they have the FDIC. FDIC has about 1% of deposits at that. So right. The FDIC, that's not going to do anything for anybody. And even if it did, they're going to bail out the top, you know, the top 1%. They're not going to bail out the 99%. They're not going to, yeah. So I would not write it off as something that's not going to happen. I always suggest have enough money to, you know, last a couple months at least, you know, somewhere that you can access outside of your bank.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All right. Let me ask you about real estate price variations in different areas of the country and city versus rural living, you know, because I'm in Central Texas. We saw a big real estate boom in Texas for the last few years. A lot of people wanting to come to Texas to basically flee New York and California and so on. But real estate prices, especially for larger land, have really started to come down in Texas. Mm-hmm. I've seen like 25% reductions recently, perhaps due to rising interest rates. But what's your take on how real estate is going to behave in cities versus rural areas and then blue states versus red states potentially?
Yeah, I think some very interesting things are happening right now in real estate that we've never before seen. One of which is this insurance crisis that's unfolding, mainly hitting states like Florida and Texas, also places in California as well. Insurance is becoming a very, very, very big problem in many areas. And it wasn't something that was as much of an issue years ago. Insurance prices were relatively stable, but I think insurance is going to continue to rise. And so the big question is, people on fixed incomes, how are they going to be able to offset these costs?
Wait, now are you talking about, let's say, home insurance or commercial building insurance or both?
Home insurance.
Just home insurance. Okay.
Yep. Home insurance is like in Florida where I am right now, it's through the roof.
Yeah.
Same thing in Texas. I'm hearing a lot about insurance premiums skyrocketing. I'm not sure if you're seeing that where you're at right now.
Well, I don't know. I don't own any insurance except whatever's legally required for my car. Because I can do math. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, in many areas you're required to buy insurance.
If you have a mortgage on your real estate, the lender will require.
That's right. So most people are paying insurance. I've heard healthcare insurance is through the roof, you know, and home care insurance, but what are you actually seeing in terms of home insurance? Like how much is it going up?
In certain places in Florida, I mean, it's going up 20-30% a year. The last couple of years, it's skyrocketed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're seeing a mass consolidation of insurance companies here in Florida. Now Citizens is essentially the government-backed insurance company acquiring a lot of these smaller insurance companies. They have, you know, 20-26% market share, somewhere in that range. It keeps going up.
Well, so wait a minute. What are they saying is the reason behind their rate increases? Because I'm not aware of some massive event that wiped out a bunch of homes.
Yeah, so they said Fort Myers, Fort Lauderdale flood, Miami building collapse is what they said. Then they had Hurricane Lee. So those four things were in the last 18 months. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But then they also said a lot of roofing scams and things like that are, you know, forcing people to, or insurance companies to increase rates. But wow. I personally think it's just one big sham.
Yeah.
Insurance companies are rug pulling the housing market. And so the big question is, if you have a situation where the entire real estate market, you have 40% of all mortgages in America taken out between 2020 and 2021, at the height of the market, you have so much debt sitting, and then you have insurance and taxes continuing to rise, yet real wages are softening, you have to ask yourself, how is this going to, you know, be able to maintain itself.
Right.
I don't think it's going to.
It seems like we're headed for the Big Short 2.0.
Yeah, bigger.
Like yeah, the Bigger Short. Yeah.
Yeah. So like in 2007, you know how much the average home price in America was, Mike?
250?
217. Pretty close, right? 217.
Okay.
And you know, the average home now, 419.
Wow.
So it's literally doubled in price. Yeah, real wages basically haven't moved.
No.
Right? The you know how much a used car was in 2007? $7,900. Used car now is like $3,000.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Everything is so inflated. We're in the silent depression right now. And a lot of people are looking at their home like they have all this equity in it. The big thing is, you know, when you have a, if you look at the national home inventory, every single month it's been increasing, walking into the winter. When do you see more homes for sale in December, walking into Christmas?
Yeah.
Than you do in June and July and August.
Right.
Like this is not a healthy housing market. We're walking into a market where people are getting scared. They need to try to get up underneath these homes.
You know, and the other thing is that the so-called equity that people think they have in their homes is not what they think it is. There was an elderly person I know who had a house for more than 30 years. I guess, let's say purchased it around 1988 or something like that. Sold it last year. I think she purchased it for, I don't know, $250 or something and sold it for $1 million. Thought, oh, I've got quarter or three quarters of $1 million in gain. I'm like, no, wait a second. first of all that so-called gain, you know, the IRS is going to take a big chunk as capital gains out of that. And then what you're left with, if you take, you know, the 1988 dollar versus the, you know, the purchasing power today, you haven't gained anything. Mm-hmm. You've lost money. You've lost purchasing power in your home over 30 years. You thought you gained, but you didn't. And like, whoa, that is so true. So it's not equity.
Yeah, just like it's this false sense of wealth that people have.
Yeah.
And they actually go to cash it in.
Yeah, I mean, we're told that you know, I mean, a home used to be the best single investment that a person would ever make in their life. And it was the biggest piece of equity that they would ever have. But now, you know, if you're talking about insurance rates continuing to skyrocket, in some cases, 30% a year, you know, my goodness. And also property taxes are going up considerably in many areas that are receiving a lot of influx. I know people who are paying, let's say, you know, $5,000 a month on property tax. And I mean, and granted, that's a pretty nice home to own, but you know, if you're at 60 grand a year or whatever for property taxes, you don't own the place. You're renting it from the county.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, if my advice, if someone's looking to buy a home or to buy something, like you don't want a mortgage, ideally. Like you obviously want to self-insure that property. You don't want the insurance company to be able to, you know, dictate if you can afford to live in that property anymore. If you have a property in Texas or Florida and you could homestead it, you know, that would be great.
Yeah.
But you want to be strategic about all these moving variables. But a lot of things that, you know, might have seemed far-fetched a couple of years ago are, you know, now happening. And I think it's just going to get more radical and crazy as the coming couple of years come.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned gold and silver because, you know, I mention that all the time as well. Gold and silver are one of the big answers. And it's interesting, John, your video isn't matching your audio right now, by the way. So yep. there's an interesting effect happening there, but we can hear you just fine. But if you think about it through all of this, like from 1988 to today, if you bought gold in 1988, like how much was gold in 1988? Like 200 an ounce or something like that. And I'm just guessing, and now it's 2000 an ounce. So, you know, it went up 10 times. That's real wealth. That's real asset protection in gold and silver. Whereas your home, you thought it went up, but at the end of the day, it didn't really help you. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the next couple of years, if people are really smart and strategic, they're going to be able to, you know, buy a lot of gold and buy silver, and they're going to be able to make the decisions that they need to make to be able to weather the storm, at least to a certain extent. I don't think anyone's going to get out unscathed.
True.
But you want to be very, very, very cautious about what you're buying and put yourself in a really strong position to where you can buy yourself options over, I guess, from now until 2030.
All right. Well, great advice, great information, John. And I apologize. We're having a synchronization issue with your voice, your audio and video, but it doesn't take away from the value of the information that you just shared with us here. Let me give out your website, greatcreditfast.com. And it says here, revolutionize your credit score with AI. And you help people resolve, you know, credit disputes and foreclosures and things that you mentioned. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap this up today? I mean, this has been fascinating, but the floor is yours.
Yeah, Mike, it's been great connecting with you. I've watched you for, you know, several years. I think you put out some really, really great content, and it was a pleasure.
Well, the pleasure has been mine. I you're a really bright guy. You get it. You're a great communicator. I think you're helping a lot of people right now. I want to encourage people to watch your videos on Brighteon.com as well as YouTube. And you said you're on Instagram too. What's your Instagram channel?
This is John Williams.
Okay. Same as your YouTube name. All right. This is John Williams. So check out John Williams, everybody. You're going to learn a lot every day. You're going to have fun doing it. And I like the signal to noise ratio of John Williams is really, really strong. Like he doesn't have a lot of fluff. He's got a lot of information. You can tell he's answering the questions here, you know, in a very compact manner. So that was John Williams, everybody. Thank you for watching today here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, and I'm the founder of Brighteon. And I'm also fiscally very conservative. I believe in getting out of debt, owning your own assets, and being smart with your money, and don't let the banks exploit you, because they will. And also don't end up holding dollars when the music stops. All right. Thanks for watching today, everybody. Take care. Today's program is brought to you by Goldbacks, and you can go to my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, in order to see all our lab testing results of these really innovative bills that have physical gold embedded in them. I've got a little stack of them in my hands here. These are the one goldbacks. Each of these contains quite literally 1/1,000th of a troy ounce of gold inside the bill. The gold is actually in there. And there are other denominations, fives, tens, 25s, and 50s. The 50, of course, contains 50 1/1,000ths of an ounce of gold. And I didn't even believe that at first. And so I acquired a bunch of these and I did the testing. If you go to my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, you can see the laboratory testing that we did. And here I am, I bought a kiln, I did the meltdowns. We used acid also, you know, nitric acid here, did a dissolving into a mass spec analysis in my laboratory. Here's some of the melted gold that came out of the kiln test, and here's some of the weights and so on. On this website, you can see, let me scroll down, you can see the actual recoveries. There's some of the gold foil that comes out in the first melting. There's the picture of the kiln. And there's some, well, different photos of the dust and everything that comes out. Bottom line is in this chart right here. The recovery that we got, the amount of gold that we got out of these bills, it was over 100% of the claimed amount in every single case. The lowest we got was 102%. The highest we got was 107%. And then we did ICP-MS testing here. And these are the results we got showing that it is better than 99.99% atomic gold, which makes it better than 24 karat gold. So, bottom line, not only are the goldbacks real, not only do they contain the gold that they claim to contain, and it's pure gold or, you know, 24 karat plus in purity, but they're highly divisible. So I can take these and I can, you know, I can give somebody or I can pay for something with 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold. Which I can't do that with a coin. Like here I have silver coins, but I can't take like a pair of scissors and cut off 1/1,000th of an ounce of silver or gold. It just doesn't work that way, and I would ruin the coin. So goldbacks make gold really usable, divisible, and it works in an off-grid situation. Power grid goes down, you may not have access to your crypto. You certainly won't have access to your bank account in that grid down scenario. These work. These work, and the gold is instantly visible. Goldbacks are becoming increasingly recognizable, and people love the way they look, and they love to hold on to these, and more people are willing to take them, even as merchants, for purchases. So go to verifiedgoldbacks.com to learn about these. This is an affiliate site. We do earn a small commission on the sales of these at no additional cost to you, so it does help support this platform, but you'll get these in your hands. Now, you might ask, well, what's the price of these compared to the price of actual gold? Okay, it is cheaper to buy raw gold by itself per ounce if you just want a gold coin or a gold bar. This has a premium over the price of gold because of the format and the divisibility and the precision and the printing technology and all of that. But it also means these have value over gold as they are accepted and recognized by merchants. So if you just want raw gold, you know, get gold coins. But how are you going to divide them up? How are you going to really use them in day-to-day transactions? If you want usable gold, goldbacks are a great solution for that. And I think these can be part of every person's preparedness. If you already have gold and silver, maybe you already have garden seeds, maybe you already have other assets, but do you have goldbacks yet? This is something important to add. And they also make really incredible, highly educational gifts. I've been tipping waiters and waitresses at restaurants with this, and then I have a little conversation with them about real money. Like, this is real gold, you know, versus fiat currency. And you can give them as gifts to family members, you know, birthdays and holidays and whatever else. And you can teach children or grandchildren about what is real money. And they will hold on to these because the artwork is amazing. They're beautiful. People will hold on to these and they'll see the value rise as the value of gold rises because these contain physical gold. As gold goes up, goldbacks go up versus the dollar that's going down. And who knows in how many years, you know, what these will be worth versus the increasingly collapsing dollar. So I don't encourage speculation, just to be clear. I'm not saying speculate in it, but just to hold on to value that you have right now, just to kind of freeze, you know, your savings. I don't trust that the dollar is going to be here 10 years down the road. I know the dollar is not going to hold its own value, but I have absolute certainty that gold is going to continue to hold value. And as dollars drop, that means the price of gold in dollars will be rising, even if gold itself is still worth the same in terms of purchasing power. But in dollar denominations, gold will appear to be going up in terms of dollars. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, do your own research. I'm not your financial advisor, obviously. Do your own research. Get your own experts. You do what's right for you. Only you know your financial situation and your risk and so on. And could these go down in value? Well, if gold goes down, these will go down in value. If you think gold's going to go down over the next 10 years, then, you know, maybe you can buy Apple stock or something. I don't know. But if you think gold's going to go up or hold its own, then this is a great way to have physical gold in a usable form. So check it out at verifiedgoldbacks.com. And thank you for supporting us also. But more importantly, you know, thank you for protecting your own assets. We're going into some very interesting times in the years ahead. Thanks for watching. I'm Mike Adams for Brighteon.com. Take care.